All right, Genesis 37. So much good stuff here. In the book of Genesis, of course, at this point, Moses puts a lot of focus on Joseph. There's, I believe, just one interruption to that, which is in chapter 38. But for the most part, the rest of the book is devoted to his life. And maybe more so how God, through Joseph, brings the children of Israel to Egypt. And how God worked providentially through Joseph to save his people. In Genesis 37, we begin that discussion. Now, we remember, how many sons does Jacob have? 12, right? We were just introduced to Benjamin in the last chapter. His mother died giving birth to him. She had two sons, right? Rachel had the two sons, which is Joseph and Benjamin. Joseph gets real special attention from Jacob. The text tells us that. What's the reason for that? Verse 3. He was the son of his old age. I think there's probably a little bit more with that. I think, and as we go along, we'll see that. But, you know, he's the oldest child of Rachel, the wife who Jacob had worked essentially 14 years for. And so he has a special kindness or tenderness because of that fact.
So a woman in that condition would have been feeling really down. So he paid more attention to her than even probably necessary, because he knew how she suffered not having children.
And we see that he goes a little bit above and beyond. We've already seen with Esau and Jacob what parents can do to cause tension in a family, right? When they distribute more love toward one sibling over the others. And the same is kind of true here as well. Let's go ahead. So it says, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. So he's in the land of Canaan. Pretty near, I meant to get a bigger map, but up near Shechem, a little south of there, I believe, at this time, near Bethel, right? Why is Bethel significant? Well, that's the area right there around where Jerusalem would eventually be. And the sons will eventually go to Shechem with the flocks, and that's where... this pit is, that we'll find out a little bit later. Let's get into what's going on. So verse 2, it says, Joseph being 17 years old. So here, Moses gives us time stamp, kind of pull us into where we are in the narrative. He's 17, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wife. So he's not with all the brothers, but with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. And what happens? Well, Joseph, and I think it's kind of interesting, I heard a lot of Bible commentators comment on this. They don't comment that Moses notes that it's the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah where this initially begins to become a problem. It says, and Joseph brought a bad, some translations have the word evil, report of them to their father. A little bit of a difficult term in the Hebrew from my understanding, bad. This could just simply mean they were doing something, he came and told what they were doing, and they got in trouble. That word could also carry the meaning or the understanding that he actually was kind of really trying to get them in trouble, and that term can even be used as a deceptive term, like he was being deceptively reporting in order to get them into more trouble. Does that make sense? So where does this fall? I don't know. Again, it's a it's a term that has a wide range of meaning to it. So it's kind of hard to narrow it down and say exactly.
But don't you think that because the way Joseph was, how, I mean, what a good person he was, that he wouldn't apply to his brothers in trouble? I mean, don't you think his character wasn't really like that?
Well, so again, we need to know that's going over into supposition. So if we do that, we just need to keep that in mind. So if we're just going with the bare bones, right? That's just, it's kind of hard to like be, boom, this is what it is. Now, he's also a child and he's imperfect, right? He was not sinless. He's not Jesus. So he made mistakes. Now, my inclination is that I have trouble seeing him being deceptive or devious. But we've all had children in our lives who, and maybe we were like this when we were children, even adults, who sometimes enjoy getting your brother or sister into trouble. You ever do that? I know you don't. But if you come to our house, that happens sometimes.
Interaction with
his
brother. What we don't really know is how old these brothers were
that
he was with, because they could have been grown men.
And most likely were grown men. Now,
more with the respect he thought he should have had. So he may have been a little irritated when he had to report back to Jason.
And again, all that's possible, right? Again, let's just say we're in supposition at that point. We're going beyond what it directly says. That's true. Now, what we do know without a doubt is these brothers are older, right? Leah's sons, her four sons, of course, would be much older. And then you had the sons of, which one? I always get them confused, but I think it's Bilhah is Leah's. Is it Bilhah that's Leah's? Well, either way, my memory is going to fail me to try to place their ages. But they are older, right? And there seems to be a significant gap to them. Either way, they don't like that. It's not done yet, though. So that's the first negative mark against Joseph. That's the first thing. Number two comes in verse 3, is jealousy. So he's a tattler, and then number two, they are jealous of his position. It says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors." We've heard about that robe, right? Well, what we've discovered is that term, maybe it means that. Maybe not. The idea is not to focus on the many colors, but on what the robe said. So it's kind of important to look at that. It could have been a robe with just simply long sleeves. But what did the robe indicate to the other brothers? Well, from my understanding, this robe most likely would have indicated that the bearer of it was set in charge of others, was not a servant, but was above the servants. I think so.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No. One day it was a tractor out there. Today it's the snow cone man. So you never know in Sanford what's going to happen. It's going to drive up the street. So the robe signified raising Joseph above his brothers. And that's what Jacob is saying. Now that's kind of significant when you go to what happens next. So he's a tattler. Number two, they're jealous of his standing. I want to notice verse 4. This is important. "But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him." That word hate, again, kind of interesting to explore the Hebrew here. It's more than just disdain or dislike. This term in the Hebrew actually indicates, from one lexicon, the idea that there is action is intended. All right? That a response is intended. So it's not just they hate him, but they intend to do something about the hate. Again, that falls right in line with what happens later, doesn't it? And so it is the idea of, you think about a marriage, that kind of hate, there's divorce coming. Because one party is just simply at the point, it's unbearable for them. And so they are going to break the relationship. And so so they hate him. And then to kind of give us a little deeper understanding, Moses or the Holy Spirit says they could not even speak peaceably with him. My mind goes backwards to Cain and Abel, right? They're out in the field, just a normal day, and Cain just cannot stand it any longer. His hate for his brother is so strong, he murders him. Well, you have a similar feeling here in Genesis 37. And so verse 5 says, okay, so that was, he's a toddler. He's set above his brothers. Notice the next thing. Now, Joseph had a dream. Was it just a dream?
Vision.
A vision from God, right? So this goes beyond just a regular dream. I've had some weird dreams before, haven't you? Very colorful. Not visions from God. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Right? So now you have him sharing visions. But what is the vision? Well, he said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brother said, "What? Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to rule over us?" So now, not only is he a toddler and we're jealous of him, but now he's saying he's going to rule over us. Here's a little pipsqueak. All right? We're bigger, we're stronger. Verse 9. Then he dreamed another dream. God sent him another vision, told it to his brothers, and said, "Behold, I have dreamed another dream." What's this one? "Behold, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his brothers, now this time he goes to mom and dad. He goes to dad, sorry. He goes to dad and to his brothers as well, to his father and to his brothers. His father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother," we'll talk about that in just a minute, "your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" So I probably have a different opinion than some people about this. Some claim that Joseph made a mistake in telling the dream. If God sends you a vision, it's meant to be shared, isn't it? Book of Revelation, that's what he did, right? And so I don't think Joseph made a mistake by sharing a vision from God, unless God had told him not to. And then you'd have a problem. But he's given this vision.
Joseph falls into the part of God's problem. It's God's intent that Joseph is going to be sent into Egypt, the head of the family. So to kind of grease the wheels, if you will, it gives you Joseph the strength, which obviously is not the kind of dream they're going to warm up to.
And so now he's got the whole family against him. I'll make just a quick mention about Jacob says, "Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" What is meant by mother here? Well, we know from the previous chapter what happened with Rachel when she passed, right? He probably is not indicating Rachel, his actual mother, but probably Leah. Leah would have been considered probably his mother at this point. And so that's probably what's intended here. And so verse 11, his brothers were jealous of him. So now that's just increased. That hatred is deepened. But his father kept the saying in mind. I reflect back to Mary when, is it Luke that mentions this? I think it's Luke that mentions that he'd went to the temple and when they found him, remember what he said? Didn't you know I was supposed to be about my father's work? After they said, we've looked everywhere for you, and he says, no. And the text tells us his mother kept that saying in mind. We have something very similar here with the father, Jacob, and Joseph.
Also, Joseph was like, he had a dream too, so he knew that God would speak to you.
Yeah, he's had experience with this. He's seen the vision of the ladder, right? Jacob's ladder. So, he's had periods when God would speak to him and in dreams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jacob's ladder.
Yeah, I thought you said Joseph, so that
kind of...
Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said Jacob.
Oh, I heard Joseph.
See?
I'm glad we...
Yeah, we're here to help each other filter it through.
Yeah, thank you.
So anyway, that sets the background for what we proceed with going forward. So the background, the context is this: this milling hatred has been building up. And again, remember that term, that feeling has to have an outlet to it, or it implies an outlet. So you now have verse 12. The brothers are supposed to be out near Shechem, up kind of to the north there, herding the sheep. And so Jacob says, Joseph, go to the sheep, or go check on your brother, sorry. Again, I'm reminded of David, right? Remember, David was sent out to check on his brothers. Here is the same thing. I did want to note in verse 12, verse 13, Israel, Jacob, tells or asks Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And then he responds, "How? Here am I." The ideal there is, I'm ready to go. I'm ready. You send me, I go. Echoes of Isaiah, doesn't it? The prophet, here I am. Is it Isaiah? It says, here am I, send me. Am I right? You'll correct me. I think it's Isaiah, isn't it? So he says, here am I. I'm ready to go. I'll go where you send me. And so he sends him out to go check on the brothers and to bring back word. So he goes down into the valley of Hebron. He doesn't find them there in Shechem. They're about 13 miles away, if our measurements are accurate, in a different location. They're in Dothan, and that's where he finds them. Let's go down to verse 18. All right, so he's been traveling out to see them. And then verse 18 says, they saw him from afar. Now, I don't know if they've been conspiring about this previously, but they're definitely ready to conspire at this point. And so they see him out there, and they say, the text says, before he came near, they conspired against him to do what? They're going to kill him. That was their intention. Again, God working providentially through the hand of Reuben prevents that from happening. But I believe they had every intent. They were going to murder their brother because they were tired of this. And so they said to one another, here comes this dreamer, or the Hebrew there is master of dreams. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Now these pits were dry cisterns, deep holes they would dig out. Why would they want these cisterns for?
Water.
Water. So in the rainy season, these cisterns would capture this water so that in the dry seasons, they had a water source. And they were deep. And to fall into one, as you will see, you get inside there, you're not getting out without help. They were deep enough, you're not climbing out. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. Just real biting hatred, vengeance seeking. Verse 21, Reuben. Now, who is Reuben in the line of brothers? He's first, right? He's number one. He's Leah's first, Jacob's first, Leah and Jacob's first. He's the oldest. I don't know how old he'd be at this point. I wish I'd thought to do the math on that, but I forgot to. Reuben, he's had a negative time in the past, what he did with his father's concubine was not good. But here, he comes to the rescue. Reuben heard it. He rescued him out of their hands, saying, let us not take his life. I wonder, that's a very short phrase. It does not really tell us like what was going on. It just simply says he rescued him. Were they in the act of bringing him over to kill him when he went over to save him? Or did he just, by showing up, essentially, symbolically rescued him? I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. But the text doesn't give us all of that. And so he says to them, let us not take his life. Reuben said to them, shed no blood, throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him. Now, we have this parenthetical thought of the mind of Reuben. He didn't say this, but that he might, he said this because he thought he would rescue him out of their hand and give him back to his father. So Reuben's desire was not to sell him, or definitely was not to kill him or to sell him, but was simply trying to find a way to bring about escape. However, Reuben couldn't stay there the whole time, could he? So verse 23, when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe. Notice that's the first thing they do. Might be not the smartest idea after they've been so mad at you to wear that robe out there. He probably could have left that at home. But he's wearing it, but no more. They strip him of his robe, the robe of many colors, or the robe of authority that he wore. They took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. It says, then they sat down to eat. So they do that, and then he just says they sat down to eat. What does that maybe indicate? Why include that, do you think? Why would Moses put that phrase?
They told him the indifference about Joseph and his condition. They don't care if he's laying in the bottom of a broken arm or anything. They don't even forget about it.
And do you think maybe he's making some noise? Do you think maybe he's asking for help, for forgiveness, or whatever it would take to get out of that?
I don't know. Do you think he was? If he knew he had these dreams and believed in it? He might have just been different.
Well, maybe. But I think when you're in the moment of a crisis, you're just wanting out of it. You're in an inescapable, at least seemingly, situation where the only way you're getting out is by the help of someone else. Probably like, come on, guys, what are y'all doing? But again, this is not a shallow pit. This is a deep pit. Maybe he got knocked out, you know, and that's, you know, he's...
What those dreams meant, like, did he know that the 11, you know, I mean...
I don't think so yet. I don't think he could see himself in Egypt, right? I think he just knew the implication of it, but how he got to that point, my opinion is he doesn't fully understand that yet.
Well, I know he interprets dreams later, so I don't know if he knew those 11 was his brothers bowing down to him, but didn't know how he got there, or if he just didn't know at all that those were his dreams.
Well,
yeah. So he had an interpretation.
Yeah.
He just didn't have the depth yet of the interpretation that would fully be revealed as he got to Pharaoh's home.
That's right. What I mean. I guess I'm picturing it more as if you're bold enough to tell your family this is what you dreamed and this is what's going to happen, I'd be sitting in that hole just like, here we go.
I've got a list.
You know,
I've got my list. And you've got a mark.
And I guess it's on the list of things that really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, yeah. And but you see the callousness of the brothers. They're just sitting down to eat, you know. And then they look up while they're eating, and here are these Ishmaelites. They're also, you may see the term Midianites, same thing. Ishmaelites, isn't that interesting? Who does that remind you of? Who is that? Who do these guys descend from?
Esau.
Ishmael. Ishmael, right? The brother. Huh?
Abraham's
other son. And so they're the ones that are going to take off this promised son into captivity, into slavery.
All the people related to this whole area.
Yeah, and I wish I could remember. Oh, where did Ishmael settle? He was down further south, I believe. I think he was down below south. Well, I better not say that. I was thinking he was further. Edom is the Esau descendants. But Ishmael, I believe, was further south. But check me on that. That sticks in my head, but I may be wrong. But so they come, then it's interesting, Judah, and I want you to plug this away, because when we get later to Benjamin, we'll notice another action of Judah. But let's note this one first. So Judah is the one who speaks up, and he said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother?" They were still thinking about killing him. Reuben had just kind of pushed that off. But he says, "What profit is it if we kill him and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And the brothers listen to him. He thinks he can just push off his guilt because he's just going to sell him to slavery, and that's not nearly as bad. He's still doing an evil act. But he's the one that introduces the idea of selling. Now remember, Reuben, for some reason, is not there right now. He's gone away. So Reuben is completely unaware of all of this. He will not find out until he comes back. Remember, his plan was, I got to get him out of the pit and get him back to Dad. Man, you imagine that report Joseph brings back. But that never happened. Because they do sell him. They sell him for 20 shekels of silver. And so they take him on to Egypt. One reference had that 20 shekels of silver was about 11 ounces. If you want some kind of way to relate that. But a hefty sum. And so they make profit off of this. Now, to me, that's a really sinister thing to do. What they do next may even be, in some ways, more sinister or evil. Verse 29 tells us Reuben returns. He finds out what's happened, and he's completely, just torn up about it. He tears his clothes. That's a sign at that time, you know, of great distress. And because he goes and sees in the pit, he's not there. What's happened to him? And they tell him the boy is, or no, he says, the boy is gone, and I, where shall I go? That's, I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't know really what he's saying. It is an interesting question. Where shall I go? And maybe that's all it simply means, is he's like, he feels the tremendous guilt of allowing this to happen. And of course, at that point, there's no indication he knows yet that he's alive, that he's been sold into slavery. He just knows he's not there. Well, the text never tells us when they tell him, but what they do next is they take this robe, this thing that symbolically represented all of their hate and their fury, and they take, they slaughter a goat, take the blood of the goat, and put onto the robe. They then take that to show to their father, and of course their father comes to what would be a rational conclusion, which is what? He's definitely dead now. And in their minds, what's just happened? In a sense, their brother is dead. They're never going to see him again. He's going to go. He's on his way to Egypt. He'll end up in slavery if he survives all of that. We'll never see him again. And so essentially, maybe in their heart and their mind, they've gotten rid of a problem that they'll not have to deal with. But that's not all. All right, so the so Jacob comes to a reasonable conclusion. Something's happened to him. I'm going to go down. Verse 34, Jacob tore his garments and put on sackcloth. The sackcloth would have been a rough piece of clothing, a dark piece of clothing. It represented deep mourning. And he mourned for many days. Notice verse 35. This is the one that still blows me away every time I read it, just thinking about it. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. How did they do that? They know very well what's happened, yet they're watching their father, whom I'm sure they thought they loved. They see him crying and mourning for a son who's not dead, who is very well alive and being taken down to Egypt, yet they comfort him. I have no real explanation for it.
That's deep
pain. It is. You know, even Peter, you know, in his denials of Jesus, what did he do when he realized what he'd done? He went out and wept. David committed that sinister act of adultery and then murder, but when he came to his senses, what did he do? He mourned. And they're comforting their father when at any moment they could say, "Hey, Dad, we've made a terrible mistake. We've sold him into slavery. Let's go get him." They never do it. And years go by. They never say a word. Hate for Joseph, I think. Not hate toward their father, but hate of Joseph. It's just so strong. And their own arrogance to overlook their own sin is so tremendous.
It's such a predicament that didn't seem to have any real good way out, but other than just all the way up to it, and that broke down to the earth. But it also reminds me of Abraham, when he lied about Sarah being his wife. How long did she stay in this horror of this other man? He didn't say nothing. It was God that told the guy, don't touch the woman, she's his wife.
Yeah.
So Abraham was in the cave. He's in that quiet. He could have said, wait, guys, she's my wife. But no, he didn't do that either.
Well, and all this is the backdrop to what we have later in their encounters with Joseph. And we think about the years that have passed, the years they put behind themselves. And then they come to face with him. And so it'll just be interesting as we discuss that to kind of think about where they are in this moment as compared to the other. Now, as we go forward, the focus is really going to be on Joseph's journey and not as much their journey, with the exception of chapter 38, which is not a great chapter as far as righteousness goes. But really, it does turn to Joseph. And so over the corresponding years, the Bible just doesn't give us a whole lot of information about how they internally dealt with this to where they get to later in the text. The last verse of the chapter tells us that he, the Midianites or the Ishmaelites, same thing, had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. One thing I missed, I want to mention, that 20 shekels of silver, that was the going rate for a slave. That's how much they would be given for a slave. So you had people who would collect slaves to sell. They would then, of course, those men would then turn and sell it at a higher price, the person. And so he goes to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. We'll stop there. Any other questions or comments about this?
The captain of the guard, what does that really mean?
So he would have a legion of troops that he would be over. I don't know a whole lot more beyond that, just being honest. But he would have a battalion.
So military leader.
Yes.
Okay. Let me show you the promise of God through all this process, meaning the well is dry, the fact that Reuben interceded in his behalf, not to get in the field, and then he got sold to Potiphar, which was a person of influence within the court, so that Joseph would eventually have the ability to be elevated up. If he'd been sold to, Frank the goat herder, having a dream wouldn't probably get him anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Being in Potiphar's house gave him avenues to that whole process.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was looking to see if I'd missed something, but I don't really have much on that particular thing. I'll say one last thing. Sheol, right? You want to know what that term refers to? That's the Old Testament term. It's from the Hebrew transliteration of the Hebrew term. That in the Greek is the word Hadas, or maybe we pronounce it sometimes as Hades. It's the place of the grave. So he talks about going down to Sheol to be with his son. Very similar to what David says about his son that died. He says, "You cannot come back to me, but I'll go to him." So, any other things? Yes, ma'am.
What would be the equivalent of the shekels?
Of what?
Shekels to the right.
Oh, you're talking about the shekel?
Yes.
So it's a weight measurement, right? So don't think about it necessarily in terms of a denomination of money or currency, but more about the weight, right? And so 2 shekels is about 11 ounces, so a shekel would be, I'm sorry, how many shekels was it? 20 shekels. So that's about 11 ounces. So I'm not going to do the quick fractional transition of that to an ounce, but it's less than an ounce, right?
Shekel is about 2/5 an ounce or 11 grams.
Thank you. Yeah. So there's your transition. So 11 grams or what'd you say?
2/5.
2/5 of an ounce. So it's not a very big weight.
In fact, most times they use balances and scales to purchase grain or anything else. It's all done by weight.
Yeah, so it's not the same as in the New Testament when you talk about talent, right? Not a talent. What is that weight? Oh, man, a day's wage. What?
A mite.
What?
A mite. Or what are you thinking of?
No, a mite's actually less than a day's wage. What's the one? Well, there is some denominations of currency in the New Testament, but this is more, shekel has more to do with weight. Does that make sense?
Yes. How much money would it be like in American money?
Well, we had to talk about the gold. Well, we don't own the gold standard anymore. It's really not easy to make the parallel in American money because our money's not based on, it's not based on anything other than market forecast, if you will. The Fed does that. Yeah. What's that?
Denarii.
Thank you. That's a day's wage in the New Testament. And then a mite would be even less. So with the widow who gets two mites, gets a very small amount, but it's all she had. Any other good question? I wish I could give you that translation to American currency. I'd have to think about that. I don't know how it would I don't know how that would transition into American currency. It would be based on, if I go to the 20 shekels of silver, if I knew what this, what silver was, cost of silver now, or the value of silver, then we could do a translation, or we could figure it out. But I don't think anybody knows how much silver is going for right now, do we? Great questions. Anything else? Is it $32 an ounce? So if I had 11 ounces... 32 times 11, what would that be? So it'd be 320 plus another 32. So I'd be 352.
This is 200. Whenever I just looked it up, it says in the Bible how much is it worth, and it says $200 today.
Mine says $33.70 an ounce, $370.
Okay, so we're somewhere in there, in that number, right? 200 to 370. Not a small sum of money, but not astronomical for a human life. Think about that.
Same people kill for less.
Great questions. Thank you all. We'll go ahead and transition out of our study. Thank you for going. Good questions, a little bit longer there, so good discussion. Next week, we'll talk about, quickly, about Judah and Tamar and that situation. Not real difficult. It's just difficult material to talk about with young years. But we'll discuss a little bit of that next week, and then we'll go back to Joseph, and we'll talk about him and Potiphar's home, and then how he ends up getting to the house of Pharaoh.
Next week, I'll make one comment about chapter 38.
Yes, it'll be 2 weeks, so you'll be back. But you can go ahead and make it, yeah.
Well, the fact is, God doesn't cover up people's flaws.
Mm-mm.
He told us about Abraham's lie. He tells us about Jacob's indiscretion.
Even in the life of Joseph, like, some of the things he did wasn't perfect, right? And so that's one of the proofs for the inspiration of the text, is it doesn't cover up. It doesn't make its heroes into superheroes. It shows us the good things they did, and also the negative things. All right, so as we transition out of this time, is there anyone who is not able to partake of Lord's Supper today? We have one? Okay. Let's have a prayer, and then we'll transition into Lord's Supper. Let's all bow.